Welcome to the Perspectives on Healthcare podcast, where members of the medical community from different roles, venues, and locations share their unique perspectives on quality healthcare, its future, and how to improve it. Now, from the Your Keynote Speaker studio in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here is your host, Rob Oliver.
Thank you, and welcome to another episode of Perspectives on Healthcare. And you're going to be picking up on a theme here because we are going back down under to the land of sunshine and sharks, home of, as Monty Python told us, Wallamaloo University. My guest today is Gabriella Rosa. She is a naturopathic doctor with a specialty in reproductive medicine. She is a member of Generation X. And listen, Gabriella, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob. After that amazing introduction and Monty Python being, you know, part of it, wow.
You just get a little bit of area. You know, listening to a podcast with Rob is a little bit like Forrest Gump's box of chocolates. You never know exactly what you're going to get.
Love it.
Let's jump right into this. Tell me a little bit about yourself and about your role in healthcare, please.
Sure. Thank you. Well, as you've mentioned, I'm a naturopathic doctor. I specialize in infertility, treatment of infertility. Specifically, we help couples overcome infertility and miscarriage when other treatments have failed. Generally speaking, most of the patients who come to us, they are in that type of situation where they've either have been dealing with long-standing time to pregnancy, have experienced many difficulties and challenges along the journey. And, you know, often they tell us when they come to me, I really don't know what to do next. I'm not sure how I can actually help myself because everything else that I've tried hasn't worked. And we then dive into that very distinct and unique situation to figure out, you know, okay, what are the challenges here? What are the things that haven't worked? Why is it that they haven't worked? And most importantly, how to resolve them, you know, how to address them.
Yeah. Okay. This is a little bit of self-confession here. Okay. My wife and I went through some infertility issues, and there is nothing that takes the joy out of what should be one of the most enjoyable experiences of a married couple than the stress and the pressure and all of the anxiety that goes with, is it the right time of the month? Is it all of that stuff? Can you talk about the mental state of the folks that come to you in addition to just the desire to have children, what they're going through emotionally?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the biggest, you know, considerations for a lot of the patients that we treat, because mental health becomes severely impacted by the inability to conceive. Or, I mean, imagine the trauma of repeated miscarriages, you know, when you get to a point where you've had an ultrasound, you've seen your baby's heartbeat, and then all of a sudden you go for a follow-up examination and discover that, well, actually your baby's dead. You know, I was talking to a friend yesterday or the day before, where she was explaining to me how she had a recent miscarriage, and she had gone to see a reproductive specialist and was told, here's a jar so that you can catch the thing when it comes out. You know, and she was so devastated by hearing those words, because she had already created a connection. She had had a gender reveal. She was, you know, she was at over 15 weeks pregnant at this point and was told that her baby had died in utero. And for her, you know, it was her baby. She knew she was having a girl. She knew all of these things, and that, you know, her baby had died in utero at 9 weeks. And she had already had this connection. So you can imagine, by being told by a doctor that, you know, here, catch the thing when it comes out, gosh, it can be traumatic at the very least. And she ended up having to have two surgeries because it was a missed miscarriage. So not all of the products of conception and the tissue came out. So, you know, these types of situations, they add an extra layer of complexity to what, as you've mentioned, is typically a natural, you know, out in the population out there, the vast majority of people conceive without trying. And that is the reality. The people who then have difficulties, and it's in the millions of, you know, one in six couples experiences infertility, the challenges that they face are several. Even from a relationship perspective, there's a lot of dynamics that are inserted into the relationship as a result of infertility. So there is conflict, there is self-hatred, there's judgment, there's, you know, judgment of your partner. There's a lot of extra components that end up making up. And, you know, domestic violence has actually increased amongst couples who experience infertility because of those really difficult, challenging emotions that both partners experience. And, you know, for a woman, typically women express these things very overtly, whereas men tend to bottle those emotions up a little bit, but they end up coming out in different ways. And so, you know, sometimes it can be a real challenge for a couple's relationship on many levels.
Yeah, I'm sure that I have no idea what you're talking about with women expressing things and men bottling things up. But you gave us an example of really what I would call it, what I would qualify as very poor healthcare. But the question that I have for you is, what does quality healthcare mean to you?
It's a great question, and it's one that I have pondered with for so many years because of these repeated, you know, kind of tales that are retold to me when patients go in and experience rushed interactions with their providers. And, you know, it's a function of the healthcare system. It's a function of how I think that the paradigm is set up to a certain extent. You know, being slightly outside of the standard care paradigm, being a naturopathic doctor, I have had the privilege of being able to actually set things up within my clinic in the way that I felt was most beneficial to the patients that we serve. And mind you, you know, I'm doing a master's in public health at Harvard right now. So my practicum project was evaluating the effectiveness of our program and figuring out how it can actually be something that can be standardized into and integrated into standard therapy. Because I see that quality healthcare is patient-centered. You know, it gives patients the ability to express themselves as well as to be able to be a participant side by side with their provider, not someone that is subjugated or who's spoken down to or who's, is, you know, seen to less, not let, no less than the quality, the care provider. Because I think that when we get into those interactions where the practitioner, the clinician, feels that they understand. These days, because of the internet, patients are so educated. They are often more educated about their specific condition than any doctor in that specialty. You know, like it's uncanny how many times patients will come in and how many times this has happened over the years where patients have come in with questions that I go, oh, hang on a second, I have to look that up, because they have done so much education of themselves on their health conditions that they often will bring in different perspectives into treatment and into care that I hadn't even considered, that my team hadn't even considered. And then we sit down together and we go, okay, let's huddle about this, because we need to figure out how do we not only address this particular situation, but what does this mean for all of our other patients who might be in a similar case, in a similar situation? And I think that really is part of quality healthcare. It's understanding what are the challenges, what are the difficulties, what are the emotional states of your patients. The technical aspects are incredibly important, but that, you know, you get trained on those technical aspects. The soft skills, which people often don't pay enough attention to, are ultimately the most important. You know, I forget who said that nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Right. Yeah. And that ultimately is going to be the differentiator of whether a patient will listen to their clinician and actually act upon what the recommendations are versus dismissing that person's recommendations because they think, oh, he doesn't care about me or she doesn't care about me. What would they know about my situation? So I think that there's so much there in the care.
Definitely. So I don't know if it's original with John Maxwell, but my father-in-law always attributed that quote about not knowing, not caring how much you know until they know how much you care to John Maxwell. But in the meantime, you gave us an example of terrible healthcare, or of low quality healthcare. Can you give me an example of what quality healthcare looks like?
Look, I think that, to be honest, quality healthcare is being human. You know, it's literally treating the person in front of you with the care and compassion that you would like bestowed upon yourself, right? If I go into a healthcare setting as a patient, I would appreciate, at the very least, I would appreciate being treated with regard and care and being looked in the eye and being reassured about what's going on. Nobody can give me a definitive answer about whether I'm going to be healed or not, whether I'm going to have a baby or not, whether my issue is going to be resolved or not. But they can give me absolute certainty that they are on my team, that they care about me as a person, and that they're doing their very best for me and my situation. And I think that that is one of the most important things. You know, sometimes it's not even, it's not the technical, as I've mentioned before, it's not the technical that counts, because the patient doesn't really understand. But, you know, if you actually just sit with that person and look in their eyes and just say, I'm here for you and I hear your challenge, I hear your fears, I hear what's going on for you, not even necessarily with those words, by just giving them the presence, the focus and the attention when they're speaking. You know, how many times have I gone to a doctor who doesn't even look at my face as they're making notes on their computer and I'm trying to explain something that is important to me or that I'm experiencing and that I would like to resolve? And then they're like, you know, looking at whatever it is that they're doing, not even acknowledging that, hang on a second, underneath my question, there is actually some concern. There is some uncertainty. There are some fears. There are some issues. So I think that if you're delivering quality healthcare, you are going beyond the practical aspect of what it is that your patient has to get done to understanding how it is that you make them feel in that interaction.
Yeah. And what you said, it harkens back. We had a guest, Anton Gunn. He was on and he said, you've got to answer yes to three questions. And it is, do you care about me? Will you help me? And can I trust you? I thought that was very powerful. And I think that it fits right in with what you are talking about. And while we're referencing former guests, Christine Koh was on and she was talking about how important it is to make eye contact so that when you're coming into the room, you're not looking down and you're looking up from the computer, you're looking at the patient. All very, very important. What do you wish people understood about your role in healthcare?
That it shouldn't be a last resort, that it actually shouldn't be a first resort. You see, understand, you see, a lot of what we do in terms of holistic and integrative medicine, sure, we utilize all of the same diagnostics, we utilize all of the same treatment processes when necessary, but a lot of what we do is understanding and recognizing, first and foremost, modifiable risk factors to disease. And understanding how we can really effectively modify those risk factors to get a different outcome. Because you see, the statistics tells us that in order to have a close to 80% live birth rate through IVF, a patient or a couple needs to undertake approximately on average 8 IVF cycles. Now, in my treatment program, we have a close to 80% live birth rate with patients not needing IVF at all. In fact, almost more than 70% of our patients actually conceive naturally, despite having failed through standard therapy before. So we know that what we're looking at, the fact that we're looking at a person, and in this case, two individuals, because again, standard therapy focuses on the woman and what needs to be done for the woman. The man comes in as almost the donor, you know, giving in his little jar and going, goodbye, I've done my bit. Well, actually, no, because fertility is a team sport. It is a 50-50 equation. And if we can optimize every aspect of a person's health and biochemistry, we get a different outcome. You know, infertility, miscarriage, All of these things are an end result. They are an outcome of a biochemical chain reaction that starts much earlier in the process. So if we're looking at how do we first and foremost leverage the two pieces of the equation that are going to give us the outcome that we're looking for, i.e. the baby, and optimize every aspect of their health and their biochemistry, clean up their lifestyle, clean up, you know, areas that may be not working as effectively as they need to be. And then we start that process of figuring out, okay, what else is there to address in terms of infertility and or miscarriage, then we end up already much further forward in being able to get a different result and a different outcome. So understanding, if people understood that they have much more power than they realize from even just the aspect of the things that they put on their body, the things that they put into their body, the things that they eat, the environmental chemicals that are present in their day-to-day, all of these factors are so important. And most people, not only do they not realize that they have the power to make changes that will optimize their reproductive function, they are told by, you know, the majority of those in standard therapy that, oh no, there's nothing you can do to improve your chances. Just come here, give me your egg, give me your sperm, and everything's going to be fine. And of course, we know that that's not the case for the vast majority of patients who go through IVF, because if that was the case, we wouldn't have a 30 to 40% success rate, pregnancy success rate through standard therapy.
Sure. And what excites you about the future of healthcare? And I'm expecting this answer to not involve technology, but that's a guess on my part.
Yeah, no, I think that technology is a part of the solution. It's a huge part of the solution. And, you know, there are patients who will never conceive without IVF and ICSI who will absolutely need those strategies. And it is a very important part of the process. Technology is not only a part of the process in the treatment side of things, but in the diagnostics aspect. You know, I'm extremely excited about artificial intelligence and machine learning for reproductive medicine, because if we can get better at diagnostics, if we can get better at understanding the problem, you see, the huge issue that I find we have in our industry, and I say our industry of reproductive medicine in general, is the fact that the vast majority of patients get diagnosed with unexplained infertility. Now, Rob, you tell me, when was the last time that you solved a problem you didn't know you have?
Right. You can't.
Right? Exactly. So literally, you are, what you're doing is you're trying to pin the donkey's tail without really even knowing where the donkey is. You know, right. It's one of those very interesting situations that it's not going to work so well.
Right. Well, okay. And there are, I'll give you just two quick reactions to that. One is, having gone through this, I know exactly where the donkey is. It's right here inside my shirt, because the problem, the issue, it actually has implications in the marriage relationship. And even if the fertility issue is not on the man's side, there's still a feeling in that, like I'm not able to provide for our family the thing that we most desire, which is a child. And so there's that feeling of like, that makes me the donkey, right? The other piece of that is, I think about the analogy is when you're going through all of this fertility stuff and you want to have a child and it's not happening. In some ways, it's like the check engine light comes on, but there's nowhere to plug in to get the diagnostic code that says, okay, you know, the air filter is clogged, or whatever it is. It's just, there's a problem with your car. And
yeah.
We don't know what it is. Hopefully you can figure it out and get it fixed.
Yeah. So. You see, and this is the thing, Rob, in any other industry, if somebody said to you, okay, so the air filter light is on and you've changed the air filter and it's consistently on, right? You go, hang on a second. There has to be something else, because clearly we've changed the filter. It can't be that that's the issue. But you see, in reproductive medicine, we just keep changing the filter, expecting that we're going to get a different result. And that doesn't happen. And we continue just changing the filter.
Got it.
You see? And that's the issue right there.
Yep. Excellent. Okay, last question for you. What is one thing medical professionals can start doing today to improve the quality of healthcare?
You know, this is I don't know how to best put this in words, but one of my mentors, she said to me, you know, Gabriella, the day that you love your patient in the way that you love the most loved person in your world is the day you will be successful. And I really took that advice to heart. You know, I really thought, first and foremost, I thought, how can I love my patient in the same way that I love the most loved person in my world? You know, that's like not viable. That's just, I can't do that. But she prompted and pushed me so hard when I used to say to her, no, I can't do that. That's just, you know, I can't have that same feeling for my patient that I have for the most loved person in my life. And I kept pondering on that idea, and I kept practicing and figuring out that, hang on a second, what if I could? How would I actually go about doing that? And, you know, what I figured was that every single person has this soft, cute, loving 5-year-old within themselves. You know, they all have this really, irrespective of how we externalize our behavior, our emotions, you know, 5-year-olds also throw tantrums and we kind of don't love them as much at that point. But overall, you know, if we think about the fact that, you know, that person has a heart and is a human and it's soft and it just needs to be cared for and loved. And that was when I got it. You know, I got that analogy of being able to love my patient like the person that I love the most. And honestly, that did transform my world. So what I wish that medical professionals could do is again, extend to others how they would like to be treated first and foremost, but also try and connect in a really loving and kind and compassionate way to that 5-year-old within, because you will get so much further.
Got it. I think it's a very powerful way to end our conversation. Listen, Gabriella Rosa, you have been phenomenal. I appreciate you sharing your perspective on healthcare.
Thanks for listening to Perspectives on Healthcare. Visit perspectivesonhealthcare.com to learn more about Rob Oliver or to subscribe so you never miss an episode. If this podcast was valuable, we'd appreciate a review on iTunes. Or if you tell a friend or coworker about the show, that would be helpful too. Join us again next time for more Perspectives on Healthcare.